on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a conversation with a 90-year-old who was just honored with the Air Force Exceptional Service Award, given only to those who demonstrate exceptional patriotism and service in a civilian capacity. A very active civilian conductor is what Arnold Gabriel has been since retiring as an Air Force colonel, having conducted the Air Force Band for more than 2,000 concerts all over the world. When we left off, though, this native of Cortland, New York, was describing his service as a World War II machine gunner with the 29th Infantry Division in Europe.
I met two men who were replacements for my machine gun squad, Harry Ashoff and Johnny Aerosmith, and they were with me for 3 months. Now, that's unusual. Like I said, the expectancy was 3 days, so we became very close. I knew all about their family. And on January 9th, 1945, the three of us were in a machine gun or in a foxhole, and we were hit by a German mortar, and both of them were killed. So they're buried in Margraten Cemetery in Netherlands. And they had their families were looking for somebody that knew their father in combat. So they wrote to the Army Records Section, they wrote to the Veterans Administration, they wrote to everybody they could think of. And then a few years ago, as you know, we built the World War II Memorial. And so I was a charter member. So they wrote to the World War II Memorial and said, is Harry Ashoff and Johnny Aerosmith, you know what, where they might be? Because they didn't even know where they were buried. And they said, oh, yes, they're members. And I said, how can that be? They were killed back in 45. Well, it was a Staff Sergeant Arnold Gabriel who signed them up as charter members. And that's how they found me. And so we had become very, very close. Harry Ashoff had a two-year-old son. And that two-year-old son came to Washington 4 years ago. And I gave them the tour, took him to the World War II Memorial, and he's going to get his car to drive back to New Jersey. And he said, before I leave, he said, I want to ask you something, but before that, I want a hug. So he gave me a hug, and he said, will you be my dad?
That gets you.
Yeah.
I've talked to a lot of veterans who came home and met their first child for the first time at 3 or 4 years old because they'd been born while they were shipping off, or their wife was pregnant while they were shipping off. I've also met children who've had a lifelong quest, like your friend's son, to learn about their parents. So what you provided for him, holy moly, that's powerful. But there's another question that I have after hearing that story, and I bet some of you students are thinking the same thing. You said the three of you were all in the same foxhole, right?
Mm-hmm.
The mortar killed the two of them, but not you.
I was very lucky. I got a concussion and some bruises. I was authorized to get the Purple Heart, and I said, I can't get the Purple Heart. My two buddies were killed. I'm not going to get it for a few bruises, so I didn't get the Purple Heart.
I know this isn't easy to talk about again, but how do you deal with that? Again, you're still a young man, barely older than these kids at Clovis North High School here.
19 years old.
To have your two best friends who've been with you for months killed.
3 months, right. Yeah.
Not to mention what happened to you in the process. How do you process that and move on and continue to stay alive and fight the enemy?
Well, I didn't go right back to the front line. I stayed back with the kitchen unit, which was back in the rear area for 3-4 days until I regained my composure. My lieutenant gave me some advice, which is valuable for everybody in this room. I couldn't deal with reality. I couldn't deal about going back to the front line again. And Lieutenant Butler came to me and he said, I was still a private then. He said, Private Gabriel, he said, now you've got to get on your feet, you got to get back to the front line and put that all behind you. I said, yeah, but Lieutenant, do you remember St. Lo? Do you remember D-Day? He said, hold it right there. It's okay to look back, just don't stare. Great advice for everybody. Because we all have things in our lives that were traumatic, but we have to put those things behind us and move on. And that's what I did.
Were you still over in Europe when VE Day came?
Yes, on VE Day, I was up on the Elbe River where we met the Russians. Those of you who are history buffs know that Stalin, Churchill, and Roosevelt met at Yalta to determine what was going to happen with Europe when the war was over. And we were not allowed to go beyond the Elbe River. And that's why there was East and West Germany after the war. So we met the Russians. But before we met the Russians, thousands of Germans came across the Elbe River to surrender to us, rather than surrender to the Russians, because they knew what would happen if they surrendered to the Russians.
When you heard the news that Germany had surrendered, Was there some sense of satisfaction?
Well, to a degree, because the 29th was going to go back and march down Fifth Avenue, but I didn't have enough points because I didn't go over with them in 42. So my only concern was, am I going to be sent to the South Pacific to go to another war? Yeah. And I had had it. But I stayed in the Army of Occupation.
One thing I guess I should ask you, in light of what you've been doing since World War II, was there ever a time while you were over there as a soldier with the 29th that you got to channel some of that stress and angst and terror through music and find some relaxation through your joy of music?
Absolutely. After the war was over, I was very confused. I was still only 20 years old when I was separated, and I had the war behind me at 20 years old. And I worked in a factory for 67 cents a day in a warehouse. And the reason I did that is because I wanted to be alone. I didn't want anybody to bother me. And my high school band director came to that factory, and he said, "Arnold, what are you doing here?" And I said, "I'm making a living." He said, "You're going to college." I said, "I can't go to college. How can I compete with students like you, right out of high school, who are playing their instruments?" I hadn't played anything but a machine gun for 3 years, and people who had played in military bands for 3 or 4 years. "I can't compete with them." He said, "You're going to college." He insisted. So he went to Ithaca College, which is his alma mater, paid my matriculation fee, waived my audition, literally pushed me into college. And he also went to the band director and the orchestra director and said, "Put this young boy in the first chair." Well, I knew I didn't deserve that. So I said, "Okay, I'll try it for a semester." And I did practice 3 and 4 hours a day so I wouldn't disappoint him or me. I figured out that the only way I was going to get through the war was to keep busy. And to this day, you know my schedule. There is no time for me to think about the war except for times like this. So when I was in college, when I was a sophomore, there was a vacancy for a choir director at a Baptist church, even though I was Catholic, in Cortland, New York. And I went to the pastor and I said, "I would like to apply for the job." He said, "Have you ever conducted choirs?" I said, "Oh, sure." Never had. And the Syracuse Drum and Bugle Corps, they were looking for directors. "Have you ever conducted a drum corps?" "Sure." Never had. I don't know if you know the name Patrick Conway. He was a famous band director along with Sousa and so forth. He was from Homer, New York, by the way, mm-hmm. and also conducted a band there. So I went to the mayor, and now I'm still a sophomore in college. I said, "You know, Patrick Conway used to have a band. Where's all that music and instruments and so forth?" "Oh, they're in the basement of City Hall." I said, "What do you think about starting the band again?" He said, "Well, we need a conductor." And I said, "I can do that." He said, "Have you ever conducted a band?" "Oh, yes." Never had.
You're sounding a lot more like Harold Hill here as you keep going. You guys ever seen The Music Man? Yeah. He just makes it all up as he goes.
But there's a point to all of this. People say, how do you get conducting experiences? You make your own experiences. And that's true of anything. Nobody's going to come to you and say, "Hey, you want a great job?" You have to go out and get it. And that's what I did. And of course, and then on Friday and Saturday, I played in a dance band. So I worked every single night of the week, played first chair in the band and the orchestra, graduated cum laude, the honor, senior honor society. I don't know how I did all of that, but very kept very busy. When the Korean War came about, I decided, well, I'm not going to go back to the infantry. And I knew that the Air Force was looking for band directors, so in 1951, I applied for a job as a band director in the Air Force and was accepted. And the same thing happened. I kept extremely busy by always doing more than was expected of me. Not so much that I thought it was necessary for my mission, but it was more for me to keep busy than anything else. And of course, I have many, many stories about my experiences in Germany and the Air Force Band in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about some of that. And I'm mindful of that advice that was shared with you, that you shared with all of us, that it's okay to look back, just don't stare. And I don't want to make you stare. But I'm also thinking about these young people who weren't alive in World War II and might not understand some of the conditions you battled. And I know the Germans were awful. You talked about that 240-millimeter gun from mm-hmm. Brest, and those 88s were everywhere. I'm sure you had nightmares about them. But what about, aside from the enemy, what were the worst conditions or just obstacles of surviving day to day, whether anyone was shooting at you or not, that you had to overcome?
Well, that winter of 1944-45 in Germany was the worst winter they had that for the entire century. We were out in foxholes in sub-zero weather every single night. and all day long. And you can imagine trying to just to bear up under the weather conditions, to say nothing about fighting a war. And we were at the north flank of the Battle of the Bulge, which occurred in December of 44. So that was an extremely difficult time. People had frostbite on their fingers and their toes and lost limbs just because of being out in the cold. There's another story I want to tell you very quickly. The 30 caliber light machine gun, every fifth round is a tracer. You know what a tracer is? It's a bullet that you can see. And the reason for that is you can see where your bullets are landing, right? But conversely, they can see where they're coming from too. So they can zero in on you. So that's why you dig a lot of foxholes, keep moving. I learned that another expression I use, you can't hit a moving target. So I keep moving.
They haven't got you yet. So the weather was tough, and sleeping at night without a whole lot of warmth in a frozen foxhole sounds like a picnic. But I'm sure you always had a hot meal no matter where you went, right? The food must have been great.
No, C rations and K rations.
Tell all these young people what those are.
Well, the K ration is, it looks like a Cracker Jack box. And I had a little can of either eggs or ham or something. And you had a little can opener on your dog tag. And you'd open up, and that was your meal, period. And everybody smoked in those days. As a matter of fact, we had six cigarettes in K rations. And I never smoked a cigarette in my life. And my son again said, Dad, in World War II, everybody smoked, but you didn't. And I never did, and I never have. And if you do, stop now.
And before I move on to more of your musical exploits, obviously D-Day, anyone that was where you were when you were on D-Day, that's a pretty close call just by being there and living through it. When you talk about being in the foxhole and two of your buddies are killed and you survive, were there any other moments that you look back on and say, yeah, that was a really close call, that could have been me?
Well, several. And some of these will be in the book, and they're not so gory that I can't tell them. When we got into Germany, there were an awful lot of little farm villages, and really not villages, a group of maybe 8 or 10 homes and farms clustered around one little area. And we were tasked to take several of those when we got into Germany. And it was very difficult because they had dug in very, very deeply, because that's where the Siegfried Line was. A whole series of dragon teeth, which are concrete barriers about that tall, to prevent tanks from going in. But anyway, I remember going across one of those fields because we figured that farmhouse now had been vacated. And as I walked across the field and pushed back the bushes, I was looking in the face of an 88-millimeter cannon. Fortunately, nobody was behind it.
Holy moly.
You talk about a close call. And by the way, nobody in this room knows a comedy team in World War II called Olson and Johnson. You know the name?
I've heard of them.
Remember the name of the show?
No.
Hell's a Poppin'.
That's right.
That was the name of my machine gun. Hell's a Poppin'. I thought a very appropriate name. And the reason I bring that up is because another close call. I'm in the foxhole, and my two buddies went back to the kitchen area there was an opportunity to get a hot meal. So I was there alone. Things were pretty quiet. And I'll keep this clean. I had to go to the bathroom. So rather than go in the foxhole, I went behind a tree. And when I got back to the foxhole, a mortar shell had hit it and destroyed Hell's a Poppin'. That's how close I came. So it's things like that, what might have happened, that really scare you to death.
So the lesson there is, when you have to go, you better go? Saved your life.
Yeah, it did.
I guess another question, and maybe sometimes I forget to ask the basic question. For all of us here who weren't alive back then, why was it so important for you to do what you were doing? Did you understand what the mission was, what the goal was, what the great importance of your cause was?
Well, it was a different kind of war than we're having now in the Middle East, because we had a common enemy. It was Hitler and Tojo, and the entire country was behind it. There was no dissension about not going to war or going to war. Everybody was behind it. So when you're up there on the front line and you're looking at your buddies, they got my back, so I better get their back.
Obviously, America's freedom was at stake. America had been attacked. The freedom of the whole world was at stake. Mm-hmm. I imagine you probably still had relatives in Italy, too.
I did. Yes, I did.
And their freedom was at stake.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And what you and 16 million other Americans helped to do changed the world for all of them. Another thing, do you remember when you first learned of the existence of these concentration camps throughout Europe?
Yeah, we came across one, and I don't think it had a name because there were several of them. And there were many Italians. I spoke enough Italian, so I was the interpreter. And this is just an aside. They were talking to me, and I'd say, yeah, yeah, yeah. And they said, no, yeah, yeah, that's German. See, see. They say, see is Italian, not yeah, that's German.
Was the horror of that camp and those camps in general something that was almost too big to fathom at that point, or did you get a grasp of it?
No, I never did get a grasp of it. I still shudder when I think about it and some of the things that I saw, just indescribable. Mm.
So many of Colonel Gabriel's World War II memories are sobering. As we head toward another break, listening to some more of that concert he conducted in Clovis, California, I'll remind you to check out photos of the Colonel at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Radio Facebook page. When we come back, we're going to explore how music has helped bring healing and also provided the vehicle for the adventure of a lifetime. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.